Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview, broadcast and recorded live on blogtalkradio.com from the new media and baseball capital of the world, go Rays, St. Petersburg, Florida. When Laurel Tooby started MediaBistro.com in 1996, being a freelancer in the media business was a fairly solitary position. She became the socializer-in-chief, organizing events to draw writers and editors together, posting media jobs, which led to educational programs, and daily news updates. In other words, she gave folks like me a community. I never got too directly involved in Media Bistro. I was always one of those guys who was so busy flying around, I was not really socializing too much. But I appreciated its existence. And I was quite happy for Laurel when, I think last year, she sold her company for $23 million. I love the sound of that. Even better, Laurel has stayed on with her company. I invited her on the show today to talk about what MediaBistro.com has to offer today and to talk about how the disassembly of print media might affect her operation in the future. Laurel, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you. Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. How are you?
Excellent. Looks like we're having a fire drill. Sorry about that. We'll just try to talk over it.
What is going on? What is going on there?
Oh, it's New York City, so there's always a fire drill. So I love how you called me the socializer-in-chief. That's good.
You like that.
I'm going to use that. Can I borrow that for my business cards?
Absolutely. Put it anywhere you like. Just refer people back here to Mr. Media. We'll be all fine.
All righty. So, what questions do you have for me today?
Questions? Who's got questions? I've got nothing but answers. No. Well, there's so many things that we could talk about, but I want to start with style because I want to know how you became so associated with boas. I don't get that.
That's funny. Well, I personally believe that if you're shy, going to a party, it really helps if you wear something that's a talking point that allows people to comment on something on your person. So for some people, it might be a diamond ring. For me, it was a boa. And it just made it a lot easier to break the ice with new people.
Now, for people who don't know anything about Laurel, if you look her up on Google, if you Google her, if you search images, you'll see pictures of her with a boa. It's just
and this is not a snake type boa. This is a feather boa. I have them in many, many colors, hundreds of colors, in fact.
Has it reached the point where people send you boas because they know you will wear a boa?
No, but shockingly, people think that I wear a boa to the bathroom. People think I wear a boa out on the street. They think that I don't leave the house without a boa. It's kind of funny.
I'm thinking you probably take the boa, you stash it in a bag, and then take it out when you get where you're going, would be
well,
my guess.
Well, I only wear it to my parties because the boa is actually a way for people to find me in a crowded room and look all the way across the room and realize that's the party hostess. So it's a way
Got
for
it.
People to feel like there's somebody here who's taking care of them. And that's what's distinguished media bistro parties from your average everyday media cocktail party. The whole reason I started Media Bistro, I started it offline as a cocktail party in 1994. And the reason I started it was because I was lonely. And it was really hard to go to a media cocktail party and talk to anybody. People are really not very aggressive in the media. Who would have thought? People are shy. And so you go to a party and you think everyone hates you because they're too shy to talk to you. So the reason I started the parties was because I was one of those shy people who stood in the corner clutching her drink, fearful of making a connection. And I started it with a fellow journalist. His name is Russ Baker. And it was actually his idea to start the parties. He said, why don't we start a media salon? And it'll be this wonderful, once every 2 weeks, we'll meet in a bar and we'll talk shop with a fellow journalist. And We'll talk about issues of the day, and it'll be very high-minded. And, of course, we did our first party, and it was all about sex. No, I'm kidding. But it was kind of, when you think about it, because people wanted to date. They wanted to meet each other. You know, they had other agendas than just high-minded subjects to discuss. And so that first party started with 10 people, and today we have 850,000 registered people on the Media Bistro site, all who want to come to cocktail parties and check out our job board and take classes from us. And so it grew from 10 people there to 850,000. Who would have thought, right?
And you know them all by first name now, right?
Oh, no. That's the dirty little secret is that I don't know anybody's first name. I'm always told, well, Laurel, you know everybody's name. You know everybody in the media. Well, I might recognize faces, but I can't always connect names to faces. It's kind of an embarrassing thing for somebody who makes a living who started her whole business around a cocktail party. I have a terrible, terrible memory. It's quite embarrassing.
And did you, have you found that you have a knack for socializing? Did you know that before you started the site?
No, as I said, I was very shy and I was very lonely and I knew nobody in the media. I knew about 5 editors. I was a journalist. I was working for Glamour magazine at the time and I was writing about, believe it or not, getting ahead in your career and career management and about small business and women in business. And so I worked from home. It was very lonely. And this party became my social life. And I wasn't invited to many events before this party. And suddenly, after hosting your own party, you realize that other people will start opening up their homes to you and opening up their relationships to you and inviting you into their world. So I went from the girl who knew nobody to the girl who knew everybody.
And so, I mean, in the early days, as you were becoming the socializer-in-chief, was it taking away from your ability to actually be a freelancer or be in the media? Because you were...
That's a very interesting question. It took away from my image as this. I mean, it added and it subtracted. It added in the sense that now that I knew everybody in the media, I could easily make a phone call that I couldn't have made before and get an editor on the phone, because now they knew my name. I had a little bit of name recognition. But on the downside, everyone knew my name because of the parties. So it wasn't necessarily a plus that this party girl was calling you. I'm sure quite a few editors wondered, why is this party girl on the phone? But indeed, it helped my career in the sense that every party is an opportunity for me to connect people, right? So I became known as this connector, and I would help people get work and get jobs all the time, and then in exchange, they would give me work. So, for example, I helped an editor at Brides magazine get a job at Travel and Leisure. And that editor, in turn, gave me an assignment for Travel and Leisure. Now, how would I have ever broken into Travel and Leisure before that? Because in this business, who you know is often more important than what you know,
mm-hmm.
as you know.
I do know that. I mean, one of the things with the Mr. Media site and the podcast, and before that was a weekly newspaper column, it was more valuable as a way to meet people than necessarily to generate income on its own. And so you meet this one through it, and then this one remembers you. You know, when there's a job that comes up, and that kind of thing. When did a business plan develop out of Media Bistro?
Well, in the beginning, I never had any hopes that this would lead to a business. So in the beginning, it was just a labor of love, and I was giving a lot. I was pouring my heart and soul into this party, and I kept. I was very ambitious for the party because I really felt. I felt something magical was happening at the parties. I felt that people were really connecting on a deep level, and you know, I know I joke around a lot about sex and you know, money and that kind of stuff, but I'm serious when I say that people were connecting emotionally. We have people who've gotten married from the parties, who've gotten their jobs. They're you know. Made new friends, reconnected with old friends. So I call that magical. I just think it's just a wonderful service to be providing. And a lot of people along the way would say, Laurel, you're doing all this work for the community. You're helping all these people connect. You're helping them get work. You're helping them get married. You're helping them have babies. How are you going to be helped? And sure, I think karma's good, and I was getting extra work, and I was getting a social life and all that. But, you know, was there a financial way for me to be helped? And in the beginning, people would say, oh, you should be a headhunter, you should be a party promoter, all these things. You should be in PR, that sort of thing. And I'd say, no, I'm a writer. You know, I just want to stay and be a writer. And then one day, I always listened to people. And when they said I should use email instead of, this was pre-email when I started the company. I mean, when I started the party. So I was sending out messages on postcards. There was no email. People weren't using it. So I was literally putting stamps on postcards for the first three, you know, couple of years of the parties. And finally, when email came along, I listened to a sage person who said you should use email and you should demand that everybody use email. Otherwise, you're going to go broke with all the postage. Because by then, I had thousands of people that I was mailing out postcards to. So I used email. And then someone said, you know, you should have a website. You're doing all this email and you're promoting the parties, but you're also promoting jobs that you've heard about and events that you've heard about. It's kind of like a newsletter. Why don't you put up a website where people can just talk to each other? You can have a bulletin board. You can have a job board. You can have all kinds of the same things you're doing in your newsletter on a website. So that was 1995, 96, and I said, okay, I'm going to listen to my customer, even though they weren't paying me anything. I was going to treat them like a customer and listen to their advice. And I put up the website, and that's when I realized money could be made. And the way that I realized money could be made was instantly the jobs just filled up. There were tons of job listings on the job board. Now, in the beginning, I charged nothing because I just wanted to have that traffic and I wanted to develop a very flourishing job board. But I knew that Monster.com existed, and I knew that some other people were making money with job boards, and maybe, just maybe one day that could be a business. And so in July of 1990, what year was it? In 96, I put up the first job board. And then by 99, I sent an email out to all the people who had posted jobs on my job board. And I said, if you're happy, and only if you're happy, send a $100 check to this P.O. box and consider this your invoice. And lo and behold, that month, I walked over to the P.O. box not expecting anything, and out came 35 checks. I thought, $3,500 for sending an email? This I like. This is the kind of business I want to do. And then the next month, the same thing happened. And the next month, it was growing. And by the time, like a few months had gone by, I was making $7,500 per month on the web, doing nothing. So that's when I realized I had a business.
Now, I want to go back a minute, because a little bit ago you were saying that you were helping people getting jobs, you were helping them get dates and get married and have children. Exactly how were you helping them have children? Let's go into this a little
further. Well, let's not get down and dirty here. But I introduced a number of media people to one another who later got married and then had kids, and they had to name them Laurel, of course.
Of course. Is that in lieu of sending you $100, they could name their kid after you?
Yeah, right? I wish. No, it's true, though. A lot of people did have kids because of me.
I'm remembering when you started the site, because I was still doing Mr. Media as a syndicated newspaper feature in 96, 97, 98.
Oh, you go way back.
Oh, yeah. And I remember hearing about you and exchanging some email with you at the time. And I think my thought at the time was it seemed like most of what you're doing was centered both job and socially to the coast, either New York or the L.A. area. Is my memory faulty on that?
Well, guilty as charged. I mean, the bulk of media people are in the bigger cities, and specifically New York and L.A. And so, yeah, I did focus a lot on the coast.
Has that changed now over the last 10 years?
Not really, although you do have Matt Drudge, who's down in Florida, but he's kind of a rarity. You can start a media company anywhere now. You can be anywhere in the world and start something online like Matt did and just make a name for yourself. It's kind of astonishing how easy it is to get into media now.
Okay, but have you ever been able to get a date for Drudge? Would anyone date Matt?
I would love to date Matt if I wasn't married, but he won't even talk to anybody. He's so reclusive. He's almost like Howard Hughes or something. He won't talk to anybody.
Yeah, it's amazing that a guy that reclusive and that quiet has managed to stay out of trouble all these years, other than, you know, his political stuff. I mean, I always thought, you know, a guy that quiet and operating in his basement or, you know, in the cellar of the university or wherever he is, that eventually we would hear some terrible story about him, and that, you know, he was doing whatever, but never happened. I give him credit for that.
Oh, yeah. Not yet. We haven't heard anything bad about him yet, huh?
No, not yet. Now, it seemed back when you were starting, and mid-90s, let's say, at that time, I remember some of my best friends were freelancers, but now it seems like everybody I know is a freelancer.
Yeah. Everyone's either a freelancer or they're becoming a freelancer. they're afraid of what's happening in their own traditional media companies.
Now, that's probably good for your business, though, right?
I wouldn't say that because our business, you know, we're still very reliant on the job board. And if there are no jobs that employers are posting to our job board, there goes a lot of revenue. So it's very important to us that the media is healthy. We are only healthy as the media. Well, actually, that's not true. We have expanded beyond traditional media, so we do have a lot of digital and online jobs. But, you know, my heart and soul are still with the traditional media because that's where I started.
And have you seen a decline in your job postings?
Yeah, I mean, just like any other job board, like look at the Monster job board, the Monster Index is down. They're all pretty much down. So for now, you know, we're going to be affected until things start to pick up in the entire economy.
I know I heard from, and I won't name names, but I heard yesterday from a guy at Editor and Publisher who got hit with a layoff there, and you know, somebody a recognizable name that everybody would know, and you know, suddenly, man, it just no, you know, the job is gone, and it hits so suddenly, and you're like, well, what am I going to do? I used to tell people, hey, you really should think about doing stuff online and create your own media business, but I am starting to think that we may have maxed out on that. That maybe that's not the way to go next.
Starting your own media business?
Yeah.
Why? Why do you think we've maxed out on that?
I don't know how much more variety there is. I mean, you know, you've got everything. I mean, David Bianculli, the TV critic, started his business. I mean, it's just everyone who you didn't think would ever show up online running their own media outlet now seems to have one, and I kind of wonder if, you know, if how far can we go out with that? How individualized can we get?
We can go very, very far, and then what will happen is somebody big or who wants to be big will round up all those little ones and package them into one package, you see? So we're just in a period of tremendous change and flux. But, you know, you can't say the jury's out on anything right now. You cannot say that because there's so much we can't predict and so many forces that are hitting us from so many different directions. I mean, have you heard of federated media?
Federated? No, yeah, I don't think I have.
Okay. So what Federated is doing just that. They're taking the strongest bloggers in, you know, in their field of expertise, and they're pooling them together all under one hat called Federated Media, and they're selling advertising for those bloggers. Not every blogger is getting the equal amount of revenue from each ad, but the point is that, you know, that's a new model that never existed 3 years ago. It's unbelievable the things that will come up, that, you know, the creative endeavors that will evolve in the next few years. I mean, this is just I find it an exciting time. I know that a lot of old school media people think of it as a scary time, but it's really an exciting time, and there's so much opportunity out there. And, you know, you just can't place any bets, I would say.
Well, I don't know. I don't think there's any more room for another media interview / celebrity interview podcast at this moment.
I think,
if you're thinking about that, I think you want to move on to another topic. That's
you're
all.
Just trying to scare away the competition, Bob.
Well, of course.
So, Bob, how many? I'm going to flip around this interview on you. How many readers or listeners do you have?
We are seeing about 1,500 downloads a day now.
Okay, that's great. So, 1,500. And do you think it's geographically? Is it in a geographic region or is this national?
Oh, that's national. It's a lot of it has to do with who we interview. People will find you online. They'll find this interview, and then they'll listen to this. That will attract a certain number of people. It's all based on who's interviewed.
I see.
Kirk Douglas was on a few weeks ago, and the counters spin like crazy.
You have an actual counter that counts them. All right, how many downloads are we getting now? Zero?
Oh, there's a number of people who are listening right now.
I should have promoted
numbers,
it better.
You should have. Well, you can do it afterward. Here's what you can do, Laurel. You can put an audio player from your Mr. Media interview somewhere on the Media Bistro site so people can come and listen to just you talk. Now, not that you need to pump your own ego, but if you want them to be able to hear you, I will give you the audio player and they can come and hear you.
Awesome. I'll do that.
When was the last time that you actually freelanced a job?
That I wrote for a freelance assignment, you mean?
Yeah.
I would say I did one right after 9/11. Inc. magazine later republished it, but I did it for a website, the Kauffman Foundation, and then Inc. magazine republished it. It was basically about my feelings about being an entrepreneur around 9/11 downtown and how it affected my company and my people and morale and you know, how to be a leader in a really difficult time. So I wrote that, and I got some good responses from it. I think it was, you know, it was definitely an interesting topic to write about at the time, a very scary time. So that was pretty much the last time I was a freelance writer, but I'm looking forward to writing a book.
Oh, really? What are you going to write about?
Oh, I don't know. Perhaps how to start a small internet company when you really don't know anything about the internet. You know nothing about finance, nothing about business, and you're really more of a creative person than a business person. I think I could write something like that.
That'd be interesting. So you haven't committed to it yet, but you are planning to do something.
Well, I want to write the proposal first, and then shop it around to some agents, and then see what I can.
Oh, get. that would be such a traditional approach. Come on.
I know, right? Maybe I should just serialize it on the web, huh?
Yeah, I mean, you're on the bleeding lip of modern media. You don't want to do it the old-fashioned way. Write a proposal. Hey, that takes time.
I know,
but
proposals are good because they help you focus your ideas and figure out what you really want to say. And so I think it's just good as an exercise.
I see. Now, do you think that the newspaper business is collapsing around us? Magazines are hitting really hard times. Do you think books will ever get hit the way other print media has? Or are you seeing that?
Well, books have already been hit by economic times. There are many fewer.
I was going to say, but books haven't changed their business model. That's the interesting thing to me.
Well,
magazines and newspapers are flailing about trying to find a new model. Book publishers, they seem to still operate by the same plan that they did 100 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to get to change by using things like new delivery platforms like the Kindle. But it's harder to convince people to read books online. It's difficult to sit there for hours and read something online, I have to say, even as I do that every single day. So, I mean, I would argue that book publishing was one of the first that was hit by just like a decrease in the interest in reading overall. I mean, except for the huge Harry Potter exception, I think the trend has been going downward for quite some time. And yeah, so they've been having to deal with it for years now. And as a result, you can see that salaries in the book publishing industry are dismal, and they're having a hard time getting people to work in the book publishing industry. Of course, right now they might find an easier time because of the downturn. But yeah. I think that's a fait accompli.
Mm. It's tough. The distribution method is so outmoded. The whole process of if I finish a manuscript today, which is late October, be lucky if it was in people's hands in 6 months.
I think that will speed up. I think they will find ways to make that happen faster. I definitely think that's going to change, and it should, simply because of the fact that people are more accustomed to getting news and information faster, and they expect it and want it. And so I think you're seeing the turnaround of books actually. I think it is speeding up already for some things, and it should go across the board for many more things as we go forward.
I want to change gears and ask you a little bit about the courses that Media Bistro offers, which I recall that they're online and in person. And which courses are you most proud of?
You know, it's funny. I'm proud of the ones that aren't in our core. So I'm proud of the ones that aren't writing courses, that are marketing or advertising courses or public relations courses, because those are things we're not known for as much, and those are doing just as well as our writing courses. And also I like the fact that we're retraining writers and editors and journalists and giving them new skills that are actually skills that will make them some money, that can expand their world. So those are the, I mean, if I had to be general about it, those are the courses I'm really, really proud of. There's one called Brand Yourself, How to Market Yourself and Your Project for Maximum Results. Well, you know, what book author doesn't need to learn that one, right? Because these days, the book
sure.
publisher is not going to brand you. You know, they're not going to work very hard on your behalf unless you're a rock star, you know, superstar, big name person already. You know, they're not going to give you any PR or marketing budget. You're going to have to do all that by yourself. And a lot of new authors don't even know that. They don't realize it. So I'm really happy that we're educating those people and helping them. I don't know. I'm proud of all the courses in the sense that they help people change their lives. I just feel like when I was in journalism starting out, nobody helped me. There was no mentorship. There was no advice. There was nobody that I could look up to and talk to because I didn't go to J school, journalism school, that is. And so Media Bistro is kind of like the alternative to J school. If you don't want to spend the $40,000 in 2 years of your life, you can come here and pick at it. Take things that are just right for the work that you want to do. And I'm really happy that we're just able to provide that for people.
Is there a course over the years that seemed like a good idea but didn't quite click?
There's tons. Right now, I think our writing dialogue course is one that we might not offer again, simply because we just didn't get enough bodies to take it, even though the teacher is fantastic. My mother has actually taken that course, and she's really excited. She's thrilled, but, you know, maybe our readers aren't writing a lot of dialogue because they're probably writing a lot more nonfiction. So, you know, that one didn't quite get off the ground. There are tons that just we try once and we never do again. Oh, look, there's a podcasting course here. Maybe you could teach that next time, Bob.
There you go. Sign me up.
Sign me up. That's right. yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. So I'm just excited because we have 15,000 students who have taken courses. So I think that's just pretty cool.
That's right. While we're on that, if someone's listening and wants to know, obviously, MediaBistro.com is the company that Laurel runs. Is there a particular place within the site you want to direct people if they're interested in checking out the course offerings?
I mean, our homepage is pretty self-serve. You just look at the top and it says courses. So
okay.
it's not like something you could miss it.
Okay.
There's courses, jobs. We have a freelance marketplace. We have an events button. We have a community button where you can go and share information with each other. You have content where you can read articles that are written by your fellow journalists about the process of journalism. We have more than 7 blogs, which are really exciting. A lot of people don't know we have blogs. We have a TV industry-focused job blog. We have a Galley Cat blog that's just for the book industry.
Oops.
We have one called Unbeige that's for designers. We've got one called Fishbowl New York that focuses on a lot of magazine industry gossip. And Fishbowl DC that naturally covers political media gossip. And then we've got Agency Spy for the ad agency community. We've got PR Newser for all those PR folks. We've got Fishbowl LA that's focused on entertainment media. And then we've got a series of mobile blogs because we feel like mobile is totally the future for media people. So we're going to be on the cutting edge of the mobile revolution.
And I would encourage people who are interested in media to you can sign up for things like the Daily Media News Feed, which I love, get every day.
Yeah.
It's a great roundup of the latest overnight news and stuff in the industry, TV, blogs, news, print, whatever. It covers everything that's interesting. And some of it's just gossipy about the media industry. That's great. And also all the things that Laurel mentioned, you can subscribe to if you understand RSS feeds. Do it that way. That's a great way. You'll get the updates every time something updates. I like the service. I wouldn't have invited you on if I didn't like the site and the services of it.
Thank you, Bob. I should pay you.
Oh, didn't you get the memo on
that? Oh, whoops. I didn't send that check. Sorry about that.
One of the biggest successes, I think, to come out of Media Bistro, at least in terms of the press covering it, was probably a kid named Brian Stelter, who was the TVNewser.com guy.
Oh,
Can you tell folks a little bit about where you found Brian and what he's doing now to kind of put that in perspective?
Oh, Brian Stelter is the future. Brian Stelter was a high school kid who was obsessed with cable TV. Now, how many of us are obsessed with something to the point where we go and we can't stop writing about it? And so he would write this almost like a diary, and it was just like messages to these cable news people, personalities in cable news, and he'd say, and he sounded so smart about the industry because he was so studious of it that people in the industry started tipping him off on news and gossip that nobody else knew about. So he became a beat reporter from his bedroom in high school, and he carried on the blog. At the time, it was called Cable Newser. He carried the blog forward during his college years, and finally, the New York Times outed him in a piece about this wunderkind, and that's when we heard about Brian. And so we contacted Brian, and we said, you know, we're starting a bunch of blogs, and we love your Cable Newser, and we'd like to pay you and hire you to write for us. So we transformed the name to TV Newser so it could be a little broader than just cable. And Brian came and blogged for us while he was in college. So he spent a few years blogging for us. And then when he graduated, of course, the New York Times swooped in to hire him. And now he writes the TV Decoder column for blog for the New York Times. And if you read the Times every day, you'll see Brian Stelter, his byline is all over the place. And he covers media, but mostly TV.
It's quite a story for that kid.
He's the future, because now if you Twitter, go on twitter.com/Brian Stelter, you can follow his Twitters. He's Twittering constantly, just as much as he used to blog.
It's an amazing story.
I know. It really is.
Well, now, I have to, before we finish, I've got two more things to ask you about, and we'll let you get on with party planning, wherever you're heading for today. But not everyone, it's hard to believe, but not everyone is in love with you, Laurel. I've seen over time that the charming folks on Gawker love Lottie.
That's not true. They do love me. They're like college, they're like elementary school bullies who, they love the girl and they can't be nice to her because they're bullies, so they have to kind of poke at her and that way get attention. That's what they're doing.
I'm guessing that in some ways that's actually good for business, because they keep your name out there, they keep talking about you. Every time they put a blog up referencing you, it links back to something else about you. Or does it get under your skin after a while?
I don't know. I would have to say in the beginning it really got under my skin, because I wasn't used to being a celeb. You know, I was getting the celeb treatment. I was up there with Britney and any other celebs they happen to be making fun of. So I was not accustomed to that. To me, I was a private individual, and they're the ones who celebrified me. So I would have to say at first I was horrified, and my husband was even more horrified because he wasn't used to the celeb treatment either. But eventually people would say, I saw this on Gawker, I saw that on Gawker, and they knew about me. So I thought, well, you know, maybe it's a trade-off. Maybe all press is good press.
Maybe. Still, I think the jury is still out on that, but I was just curious.
Hey, what do you mean? I mean, has it had long-term consequences? No. Have I, have I lost my shirt because of it? No. I mean, it hasn't hurt at all.
Then it's a good thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
Well, so last question. You sold the company a year ago. You've stayed on with the company. I guess it's a two-part question. How long will you stay with Media Bistro, and what will develop next out of Media Bistro?
Well, I'll probably continue here and do the things that I do best, which are running around and meeting media people and listening to their questions, concerns, needs, and then coming up with new products and services that Media Bistro can give to the community. And I'll continue to be the cheerleader and the CEO emeritus of MediaBistro.com for as long as they can stand me over here. And in the meantime, I'll probably write that book I was talking about And who knows where life will take anybody. So it's going to be fun for at least the next few years.
Very good. Well, folks, check out MediaBistro.com. You can subscribe to its newsletters, its RSS feeds. You can learn about courses that are available if you'd like to learn more about if you're already in the media and you want to try something different, or you'd like to get into media or just understand media better. I definitely encourage you to go there. And, of course, there's my favorite. You have to subscribe no matter what to the Daily Media News Feed. Got to have that. Laurel, thanks so much for joining us on Mr. Media today. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Continued good luck.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And, folks, for dozens more celebrity and media newsmaker interviews, of course, you can surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. That's where you can listen to my previous conversations with people like Billy Bob Thornton, Cheryl Hines, Jeff Garlin, Robert Schimmel, Bruce Davison, Kirk Douglas, and many, many others. And please think about writing an online review of Mr. Media, casting a vote for Mr. Media, or marking Mr. Media as one of your favorites, whether you listen on Blog Talk Radio, DigitalJournal.com, Podcast Pickle, Vox, Folio, Mediafly, Podfeed.net, Blueberry, Zencast Audio, Kindle, the Kindle Reader, hopefully soon, it's coming, I'm told, or iTunes. And if you've got an idea for a guest, please email me directly at bob@andelman.com. Thanks so much for joining us today. I always appreciate when you take a little time out of your day to spend it with us. Come on back real soon, everybody.